thank you for letting me come and visit with you today. As he told you, I'm trained in cow-calf. And part of the thing I have learned over the years is how important that post-weaning growth behavior characteristics are impacting those cow-calf producers' bottom line. So why do we as cow-calf producers care? Okay, where am I? Okay. 62% of our calves are sold within 30 days of weaning. And so my bottom line is feeder calves, correct? But in reality, those buyers are purchasing yours based on, okay, I understand the equation where men has one switch and women have 500 switch, but I'm going to try and simplify this, is pricing of your feeder calves. It doesn't matter if they're sold at the sale barn, video auction, or you sell them by private treaty off your ranch. That buyer is going to determine the final value of your finished calf minus what he thinks his expenses are going to be, and that's what he can pay for your feeder calf. And the bottom line is he's going to put profit in there. How many cow calf or feedlot producers right now are making a profit? Most of them are pretty negative at this moment, so I think they would argue with me if there's a profit margin in that activity. But this is the slide that was presented 2 years ago at Range Beef Cow, looking at the different ways we're now marketing our finished animals. In 2006, about 50-50 of them were sold on a cash basis versus a alternative method versus grid marketing would fall into that category. Well, in 2012, where this slide goes down to, only 24% is now being sold on cash market. And if you were here on Tuesday, you heard Laura Wright say that Tyson's now working with sale barns because of their farm checkoff to certify those for that purpose. But that's a pretty small margin. They're coming directly from the feedlots. And so as we think about that, having this information of how our animals finish allows us maybe another tool in our toolbox to get more money at a feeder calf price. Because if you have superior calves, if you're at the sale barn, and he says he can spend $1,500 to buy your calves, and he can get them for $13, he's not coming up to you afterwards and go, I feel real bad. Here's an extra $200 that I should be giving you. He's laughing all the way to the bank. Okay, we blackened it. So I'm going to talk about calf value discovery programs. The one we have at SDSU is the Calf Value Discovery Program. I did not start it. John Wagner, a much smarter individual, feedlot specialist, started it in the early 90s. But these programs have various names. Probably the most famous is the Ranch to Rail out of Texas. So what do these programs entail? You enroll your calves. You get feedlot performance back. So you probably get an in weight, an out weight, some average daily gain. We're going to predict dry matter intake. You're also going to get your carcass characteristics, your ribeye, how heavy that carcass is, back fat, and the value of that carcass. You're going to see if you got any premiums, and you're going to pray you got no discounts. And then we're going to give you some economic parameters. How much money did you make? And you still own that calf, so you may get a price put on that calf. You may not get an in price put on that calf. But the reality is you can determine what that value is. So let's go through some examples. This is a big study from the Tri-State cattle feeders. About 45,000 head total. So it looks at cattle coming in from the southeast versus the Midwest. Raise your hand if you believe Midwest cattle are much better than Southeast raised cattle. Okay, I'd say the majority of the people believe Midwest cattle. So we're going to assume since we have better cattle, we made more money, correct? That's my underlying understanding. So there's some statistical differences here that I don't know if they're biologically different. But if we look at these in weights, we're about 20 pounds. with a favor going to the southeast. But those calves came in at 320 days versus 255 days. They're 70 days older. I'd hope they weigh a little more. But their finished weights were virtually the same, 3 pounds difference. Average daily days on feed were about 7 days different, longer for the Midwest cattle. And we see that morbidity and mortality was higher in the Midwest cattle. Anyone want to venture a guess why? If I have yearlings or calf feds, which one would I expect to see more illness in? Calf feds? And so I'm assuming that is the reason there. So let's go to the next one and look at some carcass data. So as we go down here, there's 2 pounds difference in hot carcass weight. I don't know that I'm worried about that. Ribeye area was larger for the Midwest cattle. When we look at yield grades, the Midwest had more ones and twos and less threes. What is the target we should be shooting for? Threes? I get a discount for four, so I don't think I want to go that high. But that's something to be thinking about. As we look at marbling, they had the same marbling score. However, as you look at the percentage of the, choice plus and premium in CAB, there was more in the southeast cattle than the Midwest cattle. And so here's the price difference. Those southern cattle made $15 more profit. When I started looking at this project, I said that has to be wrong. I read the paper numerous times. The numbers came out the same every time. But what does this management, if you saw this, make you go home and change? If I read it, I'd say it's interesting, but it's not going to impact my management. Because you don't understand the genetics behind each individual animal. And that's the key to making management decisions in your cow-calf operation. So this is one slide I think is important, and this is where I'm going to stop with it, is healthy calves are extremely important for good performance in the feedlot. We know the more that they're treated, the less average daily gain they have. It impacts quality grade, and this is just one prime example. So my message is visit with your local veterinarian to ensure you have a good vaccination program and a health program on your operation. I don't have enough time in 30 minutes to talk about what illness does to the bottom line of most of these producers. So this is a pen of cattle I did on calf value discovery. We can see and we would expect some differences in there. So here's the net carcass value for my producers in 2014-2015. The green bar is the average, so I'm going to explain what I call net carcass value is the check I got, because check comes to me. I take off their feedlot expenses, which is feed, yardage, interest, if they had any health bills, trucking, check off, all of that, take it off, and this is the amount they get. I did not take off in value because I get in debates all the time. My calves are worth more than that. You valued them too low. You valued them too high. But let's look at these. Which producers do you want to be? G and H, they were about $1,800 per animal. Those are the highest. Our lowest were about $1,500. What looks like air bars, those are actually the range within each producer. So that's the range from the high to the low within that producer. The lowest producer was $172, which was E or F. They were like 172, 173. But let's go over and look at K. His was $911 difference between his lowest value in his highest value calf. Does that give him room to make some decisions to be more profitable? His top value animals are around 2,100. I want to find those animals and make more of them. Right? That would be my thought process. So what I want to do is actually go through some of these producers' individual calf data to see. So I did look up some other studies, and this is an interesting quote, and I thought this was kind of odd until I started doing my own numbers. He thought he had a uniform group of cattle. My producers tell me they bring me a uniform group of cattle. He saw $150 difference. We saw our lows at $172. Additionally, they also, another producer was surprised at the difference or variation. I didn't think I would see $911 from top to bottom within one producer. That's scary in my mind. So let's look at some pens of cattle. I'm going to go back to some data I found from John Wagner in the early 1990s. So here, this producer, and we're going to call him Producer A, he brought in groups of cattle, 5 steers from each sire group. And so which group do we want? We got $33, $60, $22, or I paid to have some of these cattle with a minus $250. So we all want the $60 ones, right? And so if you're thinking about this, I'm going to do an oversimplification. What 3 things do I worry about? Feed and average daily gain, right? I need healthy, fast-growing animals. I need large carcass weights, I believe one of the other speakers indicated, and I need a quality carcass. Would that be an easy oversimplification? So let's look at those 3 things. Would we, if we looked at average daily gain, would we have seen which ones were most profitable? I didn't see much difference there, do you guys? I don't see like, oh, look at me, this is the perfect animal. So let's look at hot carcass weight and ribeye area. So the coloration is the same. I want the light green dots with the dark green dot or square around them is the most profitable group. I couldn't see the light green dots. I figured you guys wouldn't be able to either. But there's no pattern. There's no good grouping that says, oh, they're super heavy carcasses or light carcasses that made the difference. Those are pretty well spread. So let's go to the third option and look at quality grade. So this was in the early 90s, and I understand performance and expectations are different today. But we go from 0% choice with the lovely pink bars, the second group, to 100% for the most profitable. So we can say by having higher quality, good performing, heavy carcasses, we can see. But in this scenario, I would say it was quality grade that made those most profitable. Now I want to ask you guys a couple of questions because I haven't figured these out. And if you have the answers for me later, I'd greatly appreciate it. So group 1 and group 2 has 80% choice and 0% choice. They're 40 cents difference in profitability. So I haven't figured out what the reason is there yet. And if we look at the 0, the pink, and the 20% choice, we went from a positive 3350 basically to a negative 250. So that's 20% difference to me. And the positive went to the lower quality carcasses. And I didn't see a big difference within those. So as you think about those, it's important to look at each of these individual animals. And so what I want to do now is actually go through some of those. So as I indicated, the quality pricing is becoming more important as we want to be paid on the grid. And so we need to know as feeder calf producers how they're performing. So ideally, I can go to the buyer and ask for more money is what I want to do. So this producer, I actually visited with him and his wife and asked, and he told me this is what his goal is today, and he has achieved this goal with some of his lots of cattle. 950 to 980-pound hot carcasses weight. He's shooting for a yield grade 3 prime carcass. He's achieved 6 pounds average daily gain and converting at 5 pounds a day or for gain. So 5 pounds of feed for one. So is that everyone's goal in here? No, but he now knows what he's striving for. And he says that starting in the 90s, and he's no longer in the program, he's retaining his own calves, getting data elsewhere. The reality is he is continuing to gain data. But based on what the initial data and understanding what his calves were doing made him change the direction of his operation. His wife also wanted me to point out that he came home and said he needed to sell some worthless cows. So let's look at what today's average are. So as I was looking for that magic number, I went to the national audit, and it goes back to 2011, so I know it's a couple years old. But let's look at carcass weight. It's 823 pounds. I just want to give you some numbers to do some comparison now. A 13.8-inch ribeye, and then a 440 score on marbling. So just keep those numbers in mind as we go forward. If this is the average, remember there's some southern cattle in there, so we would typically, most of us in this room would say some of our cattle should be performing beyond this. So I want to go to Producer X. He joined the program in 2012, 2013 was the first time he put his calves in. And I know there's a lot of data up there, but so I called him and asked him, and we had a conversation after he got this data back, and he said these are the things that was alarming to him. So he said this 642-pound carcass was unacceptable for him. It was too lightweight. He wanted heavier carcasses. The other issue he wanted was those ribeye areas were too light in his mind. Those animals were not heavy enough muscled in his mind. Well, the thing that jumped out at me, and some people tell me I squeak when I walk, and I'm very proud of that, is the $616 feeding profit. And what I call feeding profit is that's the check you're going to get for the calf you put in the program. He could have sold that for a lot more in 2012 than $616. And I'm going to tell you that calf was treated once, but it wasn't chronically treated. So let's do this. So his goal was to select bulls with more muscling. So that's what he did. Oh, I need to explain this because I want to use ribeye area as an indicator. So if you go to a slaughter plant or harvest plant, they're going to estimate your yield grade. I'm going to use 700. So if you have a 14-inch ribeye, your yield grade is going to go down. So if it's a 3, it might be 2.8. If you have a 10-inch ribeye, it's going to go up. So it's not going to be a 3 yield grade. It's going to go a 3.2. We're just going to use those numbers. Those aren't exactly the correct. But you're going to either change your yield grade by these. So assuming if you have a 12-12, your average against your peers. So that's this magically red line. So as I visited with some of our meat scientists, they said if they're below that line, they're below their peers in carcass muscling. And if they're above it, they would be above their average peer. So the majority of his cattle are below that line. He thought that was an issue. So let's put on the next year. More of them went above that line, in three years. So is that a good thing? This is the interesting thing. As you see, they also moved over to, a lot of them are grouped around that 850 now. So he actually gained 91 pounds more carcass weight. If I do simple math, $2 times carcass weight, that's $182 in my pocket. What did it cost at the cow side to get me that? So here's the average of these. If you look at these, the one thing, they all look the same. We talked about the carcass weight. The quality grade was the same between those 3 years. But if we go to the far end, he's dropping percent CAB. So let's look at marbling. So as you can tell, these are black-headed cattle. Here's year one of his data. The majority, he averaged 506. Here's in 3 years later, he's now at 456. I want to tell you a 400 is the bottom of choice at Tyson. So that's the number I'm using to give you a benchmark of where he's at. Is it an issue that he's dropping 50 points? So what should producer X do? Keep working on carcass weight, change quality grade, go back to focusing, or improve average daily gain. He was only about 3.2 on average daily gain. The reality of that is he said, as I visited it with him, as I got his data and shared it with him, he's like, I got to put quality grade back in there. This is his cost of doing one characteristic selection. Here's producer Y. I'm just going to go through this individual quickly. The average looks pretty good, 3.4. Robbie Pritchard, our feedlot specialist, would say he shoots for a minimum of 3.5. So if you look at the average, but he has some less than 2.5, some over 4. Here's his muscling of those. The nice pink star I put on there is his average cattle. He didn't just have 5 head in. He had 71 head in this year. So it's not, I had all of his steers, just to clarify. Anyone want to run to this? So have you figured out what he's doing or what kind of cattle these are yet? Next, he averages 405 on marbling. He's only a 12% CAB. Again, these are black cattle. And he has 66% choice. Is marbling an issue? Anyone want to tell me what this individual did or should do? What was that? Okay. So what he actually did is he went to a two phrase. He's a grass finish producer, and he is selling bulls for grass finish cattle. And so he's producing bulls, but he still has, as he calls, his steers that he needs to do something. So he's now putting some growth on those steers so that he can get additional frame on them and more. So here's producer X, or Z. So I'm going to quickly go through this before they actually tell me my time's up. So here's 2011, 2012. He was averaging 863 pounds, 14.8 ribeye area. Would you guys be happy with that? Yeah, it's a decent-sized carcass. So 4 years later, he's dropped 40 pounds. Is this the right direction he wants to go? And at first, I called him and asked him, because I had to call, I put his data together and I had to call and ask him what he was doing. What do you think he's doing to his mama cows? I'm famous for this, have no fear. I've heard this talk several times here, especially in the feed efficiency. We need to moderate our cow size. He was decreasing his cow size. It impacts his feedlot numbers. So here's marbling within those steers. So he has a 417 average marbling score. These are not black-headed cattle, just in case you wanted to know that. Is that an issue? He has some of those much higher. My personal opinion, I'm looking for those 900-pound carcasses that are in that 950. I want more of those. So as you think about that, this is. So what happens 4 years later, because he has more than 5 head in the program, he's increased it to 435. So how many in this room would think he is actually selecting for more quality grade? Raise your hands. How many of you think this is happening because he has smaller carcasses? The meat scientists tell me that the muscling and marbling could be tied to the fact that they're lighter. He's slightly lighter carcasses. So here is his 4 years of data. So he's not decreased his calf feeder weight. So that would go back to that moderating cow size. He's decreased his average daily gain. He's decreased his hot carcass weight by 40 pounds. Ribeye areas dropped by 0.7. Rib fat or back fat thickness has not changed. He has slightly increased the percent choice, and yield grade has not came out of the twos. So as I said, he's moderating cow size. He also sells bulls. Anyone want to tell me if he's selling more or less bulls based on the data I just showed you? Who says more? Who says less? God, we got a lot of broken hands, arms in this room that no one can raise them. The reality is he's selling more bulls, so I'm getting the bottom of his. So is his data because I'm getting the bottom of it and it's changing the profile of what I have in the calf value discovery program? So his decisions are differently? Or is it because he actually is changing the quality of his cattle? And I don't know that answer, and we've had some discussions and we haven't quite figured it out. The other thing is he is working on selecting for more quality grade. He understands that that is an issue within his cattle and he wants to raise that. So the reality is we make money from, and this is an oversimplification, so any feedlot guy, please don't bombard me with rotten tomatoes. Fast-growing animals, heavy carcasses that are high quality grade. So do you know which calves in your herd are doing that? If I had to take you out there and you tell me which cows are producing which, could you do that? Some could. Most of us can't. And so retained ownership programs allow you to get some baseline data for your program so you can make those management decisions. They impact your bottom line. If you have $900 difference between your top and your bottom animal, there's management decisions that can be made. Even at $170, there's money to be made. I was raised on a beef operation. There was years we were happy if those animals were in the black. So as you think about that, especially with the decreasing of price. So retained ownership programs give you the opportunity to develop a baseline in your calves. Decisions made in your cow herd impact your feedlot and your carcass characteristics. I haven't found too many feedlot guys that can improve the quality of the cattle I give them. We accuse them that they can screw them up, though. The other thing is I don't want you to go away that the only tool you should have in your toolbox is post-weaning information. You need to use both pre- and post-weaning information to make your management decisions. The reality is I don't know what it costs you to add bigger cows or less cows, all those are in your own decision. But I do challenge you to push your pencil and determine those. So with that, I will be around until the end if you guys have any questions.